Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Friday, May 15th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am splendid. Good to be here.
And it's good to have you here. And Kelly Goumont, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am doing great. It's awesome to have both of you here. Hey, before we jump into stories today, or topics, I wanted to let all of our listeners know, if you're going to be around New Orleans the middle of next week, I'm going to be at the ACES conference, and you should come by and see me there. It also means that I may not be on all of the shows next week. I may have to have guest hosts sitting in simply because my schedule may be really messed up. Now, when I get back from that, on Memorial Day weekend, that's Denver Comic Con. I'm going to be there too, doing some celebrity interviews. So if you're around Denver, come to Comic Con first because it's cool, and then second because we can connect and say hi. I always enjoy getting to meet people. So there you go. Come see me. All right. Anyhow, topics for today. The first thing that I wanted to get into is this whole thing about Apple Watch has a major security bug and the sky is falling and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And so the backstory is that Apple Watch has a feature that lets you reset the device completely. And Apple did this because they wanted to have a way for people that have forgotten their four-digit passcode for their watch to be able to continue to use their watch. So they reset it and then have to start over, and then they can use their watch. So that's a feature that's there. But it's been or has been presented over the past couple of days as this major security bug. Well, first, it's not a bug. And it's not a security flaw, it's an intended feature of the watch. That doesn't mean that Apple can't change this in the future to enhance security on Apple Watch, but for now, that this is how it is. And what that means is that if you lose your Apple Watch and someone else finds it and they want to keep it for themselves, they can reset your watch, pair it with their iPhone, and use it. And that's the whole thing in a nutshell. And I'm betting that you two have some thoughts on how this is all played out.
I have a hard time getting really excited about this, for starters. But on the other hand, I kind of wish Apple had done it differently, because it seems to me like there could have been workarounds. Like if you logged on to your Apple ID on your iPhone, you tap a button and it resets the passcode with authentication on your Apple Watch. And there's all sorts of things they could have done. So you would wish for that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it presumes that you're going to be targeted, you know, and most people are pretty discreet about wearing their watch, and there aren't very many of them out there. So I have a hard time getting really worked up about it, since it's an early version of the operating system. I think they'll change.
I'm totally with you on that. I'm having a hard time getting worked up about it, primarily because the way I see it is the watch is new. It's new to everybody. It's not the third or fourth version, and some people are only just now getting around to it. It's the first version, and in my estimation, they're making it easy to reset because it's very easy to end up messing things up somehow, or you've got too much stuff on it, or it's just acting kind of weird, and Apple wanted to make it as easy as possible to start over. And to me, that's not surprising, and it's probably something that will change over time. It seems like people have forgotten that the Find My iPhone sort of activation lock is a recent development. It's not like that's been around for your phone forever. And, you know, if people are going to wave their hands and holler about the lack of security measures for this watch, I would like to know what the security measures are for the watch that they're wearing. What's to keep somebody from keeping my Fossil watch for themselves if it happens to come off of my arm in a cab?
Exactly.
What keeps somebody from keeping that and going, hey, I have a new watch now. That's pretty awesome. There's not. And so to me, the fundamental, like fundamentally the act of wearing a watch, that watch is inherently not secure. You're not going to be able to keep somebody from it. And once it gets a certain distance from your phone, it's got limited functionality anyway. So I'm like you, John, I'm having a hard time summoning the energy to wave my hands in tragedy over this, because I just don't see it being that. Because whether it's because Apple couldn't figure out an elegant way to sort it out before the watch got out the door, or whether it's because, you know, my assessment, this is in fact new and they wanted to give people an easy way to sort of start over again if they get to a point and go, man, this is just not how it should be. I really just want to pave it and begin again now that I know what I want to do.
I saw this headline this morning that said Apple has, I don't remember exactly, but it said something like Apple has overlooked this absurdly easy way to compromise your Apple Watch.
Oh, Lord.
And it's, you know, it's headlines like that that percolate into people's brain. After all, if the headline is hysterical and memorable, it's going to percolate into people's minds, and then they're going to start talking about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like gossip.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Now, here's where I see technical issues that Apple will have to figure out how to work around for enhancing what we can do to protect our Apple Watch should it be lost or stolen. All right. So we have Find My iPhone. We can use that to track down an Apple Watch if Apple decides to give us that ability. And then along with Find My iPhone, there's the ability to brick or completely lock down our iPhones should they be lost or stolen. We could have a similar feature for Apple Watch at some point. But here's the thing. All these features that Apple Watch can take advantage of through the internet, assume that you have an iPhone that it's paired to. The exception is for known networks that Apple Watch has been on at the same time as your iPhone, the device can then use those Wi-Fi networks. So if you can get an Apple Watch onto a Wi-Fi network somehow, then at that point you could use Find My iPhone, assuming we had the feature, or remotely change the passcode or brick the watch so that it's unusable. And I'm not sure if that's going to be a practical way to do something like this. I think the more practical way may be that that through your iCloud account, you brick your Apple Watch and then you have to wait for someone to reset the watch and then try and pair it with their iPhone, at which point it does its check-in with Apple and then sees that this is a watch that through your iCloud account has been tagged as lost or stolen, and then it bricks the device and gives the location of where it's at. So
That'd be great.
Yeah,
it sounds like something great that is doable and might probably come.
But that also assumes that someone is going to reset the watch and try and pair it. I mean, it's a likely thing, but you know, it's also one of those things that unless someone proactively decides they're going to use the watch they stole,
right?
Then there's it's just not going to happen otherwise. So I'm curious to see if Apple adds in new, we'll call them security features, for lack of a better term. I think they will, but I'm betting that they're not going to work in the same way that we expect based on what we know today from iPhone and iPad, Find My iPhone.
Precisely.
Another thing you could do is you could have the Apple Watch announce its serial number to the iPhone and store that in the secure enclave. And the only way you can ever use the Apple Watch is with that phone until you authorize it with your Apple ID.
Sure. And but then you need to make sure that you have a fairly transparent and elegant way to hand off that watch to your next iPhone when you upgrade.
Right.
Yeah. You just have a mode. You have a mode in the Apple Watch app that says I'm going to transfer this to another phone, and then you enter your Apple ID and authenticate.
Right. Yeah. Because if it's something like okay, so like today with iTunes, which we know is an issue. If
you, spoilers.
Yeah, if you have authorized computers to use your iTunes account, and then one of those computers goes away, gets reformatted, sent off to someone else, whatever, you sell it, but you never deauthorized that computer, well, you're kind of stuck, unless you're going to deauthorize all of your computers.
Yes.
And I would hate for Apple to give us a kludgy system like that, where you have to intentionally unpair your Apple Watch, switch to a new phone, and then repair again. There would need to be a way for this to be just transparent. Otherwise, someone's going to get a new phone. They're going to and they'll trade in the old one at the Apple store and get their little credit or gift card thing.
Good point.
Their phone is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're stuck with a watch that's paired to a phone that they have no access to anymore.
Great.
Good point. Yeah. And
I'm sure that this is going to get sorted, and I'm reasonably confident it's going to get sorted as part of the pending iOS update that comes with the new phones. That it's going to be, there's going to be some sort of intermediary, sort of like how we end up getting a new version of iTunes a few weeks before we get the new phones, so that they have the capability to deal with the new hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be the same sort of thing. There's going to be a watch update, and hopefully it's the little small things like that that they're going to update, just sort of the rough patches that they discover. Because as a person who has done a fair amount of testing, I can tell you that you sort of get blind to some stuff. You just sort of accept that that thing that's super slow is going to take that amount of time, and it never occurs to you after a while to sort of complain about it, because it's just been that way for so long. And I think that there's going to be a lot of that, that now that they're out in the world, people are going to go, how on earth did you let this out in the world with this that's happening, you know, whatever this is, with this that's happening. And, you know, as amazing as Apple designers are, as amazing as Apple's hardware and software folks are at this stuff, when you test things and they're new and they have rough spots, you get like the most obvious rough spots. And now there's just the smaller things that are going to really level up that experience. And I think that that's an update that's probably going to come over the summer, maybe after WWDC, but before the fall iPhone event. And we're going to see a lot of that stuff get cleared up.
Kelly, mine arrived yesterday. I am incredibly pleased.
I know.
I've just touched the surface of it.
Literally.
And it's amazing. Yes. Yes, I've just touched, but not scratched the surface. And I am very happy with this device.
And
I'm having fun exploring it, just beginning to learn about its capabilities.
So and I would like to point out, I was in fact right. You did get yours before I got mine.
And I was also right in that I told you yours was going to show up yesterday.
Well, my window, as soon as I ordered it, it said arrival delivery expected May 13th to May 27th. It was back in April 10th when I ordered it. And I thought, well, that's a long time. But Apple delivered as promised. It came on the 14th.
Yes, they did.
Second day of the window. So in a sense, they didn't over-deliver by beating the window, but they over-delivered by being in the second day of the window.
Right. And for those who didn't catch that joke, I'm the only person who didn't order an Apple Watch, apparently. And so that's why when John was talking about how it would take so unbelievably long, I kept telling him he'll get his watch before I get my watch, because I still don't even have an order in for one yet. So,
well, you'll have plenty of opportunity for hand-me-downs.
That's what I'm hoping, is that somebody will have one and go, you know, I use this for like a month and so anybody want one? So that's what I'm hoping. So if you are that person, if you have one and you are now disenchanted, you should get in touch with us.
Yeah, call Kelly.
Please.
All right. So the other thing I want to hit before we have to wrap up today is kind of a continuation of our discussion from yesterday that spawned from Kelly describing iTunes 12 as Apple's Weasley house.
Which is called the Burrow, for people who are going to write in and talk about that. I know it's the Burrow, but I didn't think that people would understand if I just referred to it that way.
Right. And so the Weasley house, or the Burrow, is a house that started off as one thing, but as the Weasleys needed other things, they would just kludge something else onto the house. And eventually it became this ridiculous conglomeration sticking up into the air with what looks like multiple homes jammed together, mm-hmm. as if it was an everlasting gobstopper that you could live in. and that's the Weasley house. And that's what iTunes has become. So Kelly, you have some ideas about what we can do.
I do. This is going to be one of those, I write these every once in a while. If I ran the zoo, here's what I'd do kind of posts. And I think iTunes needs to break up with itself. That's what needs to happen. And there are probably all manner of takes on this. People who think it needs to be divided this way and people who think it needs to be divided that way. Where we are united is that most everybody thinks that the current iTunes model really needs to be Old Yellered. So here's my assessment of what we need. And I was trying to do it by ease of use. So what I did was I took iTunes and I split it into three. There are three pieces that I think iTunes really needs. So there's the store. So there's the buy section. And this is where you buy all the stuff that you could buy from iTunes right now. You can buy movies and TV shows. You can buy music and you can buy iOS apps. And you do all of that. And it's very similar to the Mac App Store because the Mac App Store doesn't do anything. You don't manage your apps in the Mac App Store. You don't back up using the Mac App Store. All it is do you want to buy apps? And here's the apps you bought. That's it. If you want to install them from there, you can. And that's the end of its functionality. It tells you when there's updates, but it has no management features built into it. It's basically just a store.
It's the grocery store for apps.
Right. And it's great. I mean, I'm not harshing on the Mac App Store. I think it's fab. So first, I think there should be that kind of store. Here's all the stuff that you can buy, you know, whether it's records, you know, or whatever the young people call them these days, whether it's movies and TV shows, if you want to buy those things, or whether it's iOS apps, if you want to browse the iOS store, the iTunes store for iOS on your computer, like you can now in iTunes, you can do that because it's a nice experience. And sometimes you want to buy something, or you know, you're reading an article on your computer and you go, oh, that's a great app. I really want to go buy it. And then, you know, you can do it right there from your machine. I'm not trying to take any of that away. I just think that that needs to be limited to its own section. And that needs to be an app all by itself. iTunes Store needs to be its own thing. Then we have the player, the iTunes player. Remember the player? If you've used OS X for a long time, I mean, iTunes is even older than OS X, but a lot of people sort of came to the Mac after that. So I'm going to just go with that. Remember back in the day when all you could buy in the iTunes Store was music and the player was awesome and it was fast. And even if you loaded it with a truly unbelievable amount of music, it didn't care and it just played everything and it responded and the search was easy and you could sort by whatever and you can customize your view. And when you hit play, it just plays and it doesn't give you any grief and you don't have any
icons for
it. Doesn't hide things. There's no shenanigans. So I basically, now if I had my way, what would happen is panic if you're listening. Panic Software would resurrect Audion, which almost was the basis for iTunes, by the way. There's a story about that on their website, about how they went to Cupertino and met with people named Steve.
But it was SoundJam that ended up being the one.
Yes, they ultimately bought SoundJam because Panic said no. That's what happened. And anyway, so the player. You could, whatever, you know, a nice lean and mean player without, like, maybe it will link out to these other places, but the player is the player all on its own. Then you have another app, which I imagine to be sort of like image capture. And it's just called, in my world, it's called iTunes Manager. So whenever you plug hardware into your computer, whether it's an iPhone or an iPod or an iPad or an Apple Watch or an Apple Majigger or your Apple cybernetic implant, or, you know, the thingy out of your Apple car, whatever it is. When you plug it in, this pops up. and it will allow you to restore to factory, backup, restore from a backup, restore to factory settings, and maybe, you know, install updates. Just really, really basic stuff just for when you plug hardware into your computer. That's it. That's all it needs to do. And the reason that this confounds me is because when you ask people about Apple, anybody, whether they're tech people who follow this stuff obsessively, whether they're not, when you ask people about Apple and sort of what they think of it, what they know about it, you know, people are going to tell you it's minimal design, it's clean design, it's simplistic, it's, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, it only is exactly what you need and not an ounce more.
Except so, for iTunes.
So for this company to be the company responsible for iTunes is the thing that short circuits my brain. And that's part of, I think, a lot of people's angst over iTunes is, I know Apple is better than this. I want them to be better than this. I know they are capable of such beautiful, amazing things. And then they give me iTunes. You know, and really, it feels like I'm being punished if I'm using iTunes. It's such a frustrating experience. And people who are new to iTunes, forget about it. And so, to me, there's a huge disconnect between these two things, particularly because of two things. Number one, like I said, Apple is known for their clean, elegant design, which is absolutely nothing more than what you need. And because Apple has been pretty relentless in their march forward, you know, floppy drive, not anymore. You know, USB 2, not anymore. You know, well, Kelly, displays where you can see individual pixels, not anymore. Apple, optical drive, not anymore. Apple is really relentless about marching forward. They've dismantled iOS and put it back together. They've dismantled macOS and put it back together. And we're still stuck with this stinker of an app.
Kelly, let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Okay.
I think I agree with you. That's how exactly the apps ought to work. And that would be great.
Yay!
But I think one of the explanations for why Apple hasn't done it, and I've read this in other places, and I kind of agree with it, is that Apple's afraid that if you're in the player and uh-huh. you're listening to music and you want to buy mm-hmm. more music from that fellow, it'll be too hard if the store isn't integrated into the player so that it's a no-brainer to buy more from that artist. And so switching applications would be a deterrent to the mm-hmm. easy click and pay.
And I totally get that.
And that mentality is probably driving their decisions, and that's unfortunate.
Well, but there's it should be the same app, and there should be integration. So if I'm listening to, and this has actually happened, if I'm listening to something on my phone, and I'm probably the only person this ever happened to, I was actually listening to iTunes Radio, and it was playing an Al Green song, and I went, wow, I'm pretty sure there's not enough Al Green in my iTunes library. And I went and I looked, and sure enough, I was right. And I went, you know, this is on like Al Green's greatest hits. I'm just going to buy that, and that'll cover all the stuff I really want to make sure I have right now. And I went and bought it, and it was easy. Now, the thing is, I did this on my phone, so it switched me to a different app automatically in order to make my purchase.
But your music kept playing.
My music kept playing. It was a seamless experience, and I think they could do the same thing on macOS, because right now if I'm listening to a song in iTunes Radio on my phone and I go, hey, I like this song, I want to buy it, it takes me to the store because they're not the same thing on iOS. So when people talk about, you know, bringing iOS into the Mac, that's one of the things I want, is break this up, because I think that there's a much better experience to be had. Even if it's just with a button, you know, like if I say buy this song, it automatically launches the store to the music view and shows you the song that you're talking about and says, you know, it's on this album. And do you want the song? Do you want the album? Whatever. And bam, you're done. And it's a great experience. I've done it a few times, actually, with iTunes Radio. You know, it plays something and I go, gosh, I don't think I have that. I'm not sure how that's possible, but let me fix it this minute. And it worked. Even though they were different apps, like somehow I managed to survive. And I get that there's inertia and I get that they're worried about confusion. But if really their problem is confused users, then why did they give iTunes 12 to people? That's going to be my question.
You know, and I hate to cut us off right here, but I guess we have to end on that question because we're out of time.
Why? Well, I would love to hear. 12? I would love to hear people's answers to that question. So,
Jeff, can feed it to the wood chipper, Kelly.
Well, yeah. That's too. But Jeff, how can people give us answers to that question?
That's a really good question, Kelly. So they can email. And if you do that, that would be at observations@macobserver.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, which will be on the TMO website. And you can also interact with us, send messages to our Twitter account, which is at TMO Daily.
Yes, please. And I am very curious. I really want to find out from you guys about this. The piece that we're talking about that I've written will be linked to in the show notes. And I really do want you guys' feedback on this.
Yeah, I'm betting there's some people that have some really great ideas. So looking forward to hearing those.
I hope so.
Hey, Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course. My pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here too.
You bet. I'm still using the Blue Encore 100, so let me know what you think.
Sounds good. All right. And listeners, thank you for joining us. And we will see you again on Monday.